Snowball Spa. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Kauf with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Wednesday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. We've got all kinds of stuff on tap. Stanley Cup Finals, Game 4 tonight. The champs came back off of life support on Monday, or on, Monday. Let's see, was it Monday night? Yeah, Monday night. In Game 3, can they continue the comeback? Interesting stat about postseason win streaks there. We're a day away from one of the most important nights in Thunder basketball history. We kind of glossed over what yesterday was. Yesterday was Game 5 of the finals back in 2012, 10-year anniversary of losing that game. But more importantly, yesterday in Thunder history was the last time we saw Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden in the same uniform at the ripe young ages of 23, 23, and 22. Let's talk about that. Did it ever cross your mind as they were showing those three standing up at the bench, kind of hugging each other as the final seconds of Game 5 ticked off the clock? Did it ever cross your mind that night that was the last time we'd see them play together on the same team, all three of them, at least in Oklahoma City? And from that, would it have worked? Would it even have worked if they'd have come back the next year? And then what lessons can be learned from that era of Thunder Hoops that can be applied to what this era of Thunder Hoops is trying to build? So we'll hit that. College World Series semifinals start today. The Sooners and A&M at 1. Arkansas and Ole Miss start later on, 6:30 for that game time. Talk about that. And then also, OK Kids softball tournaments all across the state of Oklahoma get going in unison tomorrow. Who's going? What Western Oklahoma teams are going? What age groups? And where are they headed? We'll talk about that, as well as Jared has particular knowledge on one of those tournaments above the others. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. It's 225-9698. Give us a call, shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things. Whatever else might be on your mind, feel free to chime in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, a couple of ways to stay in touch with the show. You can log on to KADSAM.com, live stream us that way, or download the Paragon app. Paragon Communications app is free to your phone. It's got everything. It's got all the radio stations here in Elk City. It's got the Penny News, brand new edition of the Penny News. Hit the website last night at midnight. Check it out at thepennynews.com, and then you can start picking up this week's copy of the Penny News at your local newsstands this evening into tomorrow. Also, Big Elk TV and Paragon TV are in there. So during the high school sports season, easy access to live streams there. And, of course, we have the Skinny on Sports podcast on KADSAM.com or iTunes. You can go back and listen to any of the shows that we have there podcasted for your listening pleasure. Good morning, Jared.
How are you?
I am just fine. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm real well. Halfway through the week.
How many practices have you guys had so far this week?
We've had two.
I had a feeling. You're going to practice tonight, or you're going to give them the night off?
We're going to get them in the barn. And how we do that is we do them in groups of three or four at a time, and it only takes them about at max 15-20 minutes, so we're not in there, they're not in there the entirety of a full practice, if that makes sense. We have three stations that we set up. I don't want to give away too many secrets.
No, nobody's listening for your secrets,
but
I don't think.
They get in there and they go to each station and they get out. Just, we don't, you know, just quick work in the batting barn and that's it. So kind of a fine-tune last batting practice before we hit the road tomorrow.
Are you listening, Purcell Chaos? That's how it happens.
And I have tried, and I can't find anything about them. If they're not on Game Changer, we don't know. Just to get an idea of, like, well, what's their record? You know, and a lot, you know, not everybody's on Game Changer, especially that young. We do it.
Which is actually restoring a little bit of faith in humanity that not all the 8U coach pitch softball teams in the state of Oklahoma are on Game Changer.
But long time ago,
I can't say anything because our team is on Game Changer.
Well, we requested is that, hey, not my grandparents in Colorado can't go. My you know, stuff like that. They want to know why they want to keep up with the team. So that's
a good way to do it.
That's why we do it.
Do you
the
video?
Stats don't. We've tried a few times.
Have you?
We've tried a few times. It's tricky, you know, with the phone. When it gets too hot, the phone can overheat and all that stuff.
Yeah, and where you got to put it is normally in a situation where the sun will be beaming right.
Exactly, right behind home plate, a little elevated, mm-hmm. so you're not obstructed by the umpire. So we've tried it a few times, and then, you know, I mean, you've seen some of it. I think I've shown you a couple. It is what it is, and I think this week. We've obtained a GoPro that has a better quality camera than, say, your phone. So we're going to try that out and see how that works. Because, again, not everybody can make the trip to Stroud. And so we want to make sure everyone has an opportunity to see these kids play. So, but, yeah, that's why we do the Game Changer. Just really for those who can't be there. The stats don't matter. I mean, come on. How many errors are you going to?
Whoa. Stats don't matter, my foot. Don't tell anybody on the Sarah Eagle 10U that's not true, especially Compton. He knows everybody's stats, what they're hitting for the year.
Well, let me restate that.
I'm going to go ahead
the
and
stats
say.
Stats might not be accurate.
There, that's, see, now that's what where I would
we
go.
We just like,
it.
Okay, this girl got to first, and you're going to see
hit.
These astronomical batting averages yeah. where realistically there's a lot of errors involved. But that's 8U for you, you know.
You know, I had the chance to operate the scoreboard on Sunday down there in Blanchard. They just had it set up, and if somebody would run it, you could have a scoreboard. So I was told I needed to do that. And it did have – it had a spot there on the bottom right of the scoreboard out in right center field
hit
for
or
hit or
error.
Man,
yeah.
I wanted to mess with people so bad, but
I didn't
do it. I chose not to, and I just kept the score and the balls and strikes and the outs or whatever. But, yeah, I was wanting to see if I couldn't. I was going to try not to make it in case Matt Yost's kid made an error. I was going to call it a hit just because I didn't want to have to argue with him because
yeah.
he's giant. But I decided I better not do that. I didn't need a whole bunch of Karens behind me getting on to me about their kid not making
that's
an error.
Where it gets muddy. Where was that a hit or error? I mean –
And I was talking about the ones on our team, not the other.
That's funny.
So I decided that it would be in my best interest not to go that way.
No.
Anyhow, so you guys are headed to Stroud.
Stroud, yes.
So the 8U, if you're not familiar with these tournaments, all of them have two separate brackets, right? And so you play the bracket play in your own bracket and, you know, first and second in the bracket, then end up cross-bracketing over in the semifinals to play with the other. So you guys are actually in the red bracket, 8U red, along with Moreland,
they're gonna be good.
Cheyenne Raiden, and Burns Flat.
Burns Flat, yes.
So Burns Flat will play Oilton on Thursday, tomorrow. And if they win, they'll play Okemah. Cheyenne Raiden doesn't play till Friday. They will play the winner of Tallahena and Moreland. So Cheyenne Raiden got a bye into Friday. They will play the Tallahena-Moreland winner. And then you guys play Purcell. Canute Purcell, winner against Winniewood. Any knowledge outside? I mean, obviously you know about Cheyenne Raiden.
We know about Cheyenne. We're a little familiar with Burns Flat. They didn't play in the Kids Inc. League this year, but we did see them at a tournament, and we're friends with them, you know, mm-hmm. so familiar with them. And Navajo, too. Mentioned Navajo plays at 10 a.m. on Friday. They got a bye. They get the winner of Blanchard and Little Axe. Very familiar with Navajo.
Yeah, they're in the blue bracket.
They're in the blue bracket away from those teams you mentioned. I know there's a Weatherford team in there, too.
Weatherford Arnett and
Arnett
Navajo.
Team. Yeah. So there's some good representation from this side of this on this side of the state over there. But really, I mean, other than those teams I mentioned, don't know a lot about these other teams. So that's the part of the fun, is not knowing and doing our best and just worry about, just take care of your business. And
do you recognize teams from last year?
Well, there was a Purcell team that, in fact, there are two Purcell teams in this thing. And there was a Purcell team in it last year, to my knowledge, to my recollection. I was looking at the back of the T-shirt for all those teams.
Right, right.
And, but I don't think it's the one we're playing. I think it's a different one. So, Moreland, recognize them. They're good. And let me look up and down.
You know what town feels like they always have teams, softball and baseball, in these things?
Stigler. Yep.
That's exactly it.
Yep.
It always feels like Stigler, Salisaw, especially on the baseball side for Salisaw. There's teams that are always in this thing. But, yeah, you're at Stroud.
Yep. And last year we were in Preston, which is near Jinx, so there's a lot of stuff to do. We stayed in Jinx. This year we are staying in Stroud, and some might ask, well, what's there to do in Stroud? I looked it up. There's a lot of great eateries there, and the facilities there, I see why they got a state championship or state tournament there, because it is a fourplex type facility. I looked like a lot of shade. It looked very similar to, and I was told this by our man Jeremy, very similar to what Fire Lake has over there in Shawnee, which they host high school state tournaments.
Right.
So the facilities, I think, are the big reason they got the draw, and I don't doubt it'll be a good hosted tournament.
So that is the 8U, Stroud. The 10U is just right down the street here in Weatherford.
That's right.
Weatherford has the 10U in the blue bracket.
Look at you. I don't even pull this. You got them all?
I've got it.
Up there.
I've got it all written down. That way I was familiar with it. So in the blue bracket over at Weatherford, Cordell is in. They will play Elmore City first. A win would get them Purcell. The 10U Canute team will play Stratford. And then also Moreland and Weatherford play each other in the 10U blue bracket over there at Weatherford. In the 10U red bracket, Burns Flat Deal City plays Washington Harding. Yolk City Yolkettes get Oilton on Thursday. Henrietta and Hobart play on Thursday. Sealing will play the Washington Burns Flat Deal City winner on Friday. And then Cheyenne Raiden is into Friday as well. They get Lexington first. So Elk City will play Thursday. The Elk City Elkettes. Hobart will play Thursday. Burns Flat Deal City will play Thursday, as will Canute and Cordell.
If I'm not mistaken.
Actually, Canute may play Friday. Cordell will play Thursday.
Canute plays Thursday.
Is it Thursday?
Thursday, 6:15.
Yeah, they may have been
like
one.
Different fields, I'm
they
sure.
were into the next.
Right.
I couldn't remember if they were into the next one or the whole next one.
That Elk City team, Jamie.
I'm sure that's got Lola.
Lola.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good little bunch right there.
Good luck. Good luck being faster than her.
Yeah.
Whoever you are.
Now, that Fletcher team I recognize from 8U last year.
The Fletcher
Rebels. This is
my
first time to really look at this 10U bracket. The Fletcher Rebels, they had hitters. They're the one who eliminated us. We had to beat them to get into the championship
semifinals
series, basically. Yeah. The final four, if you will. And they took us out on that Sunday. So that next round matchup looms for Canute if they get by Stratford.
Yeah,
a lot of local teams here too.
Yeah, tons
of them.
Yeah. Tons of locals there. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 9. Nine in the 10U.
It's awesome.
Then 12U. 12U state tournament is in Ada. Now, does Jeremy have a private plane rented to fly back and forth from Ada to Stroud?
Lucky
actually,
Stroud and Ada, they're on the same north-south highway.
Yes.
I don't know what the highway is, but it is about an hour-plus drive for him. But he's going to attempt to go back and forth.
That's a lot better than, say, Preston and Clinton or Weatherford or whatever it was last year where he really
Weatherford.
Had no shot.
He didn't get to Preston last year. He stayed in Weatherford and...
And didn't play.
And didn't play.
Well, you know what? He's 40 now, so he's a year wiser.
Yeah. He's living up to his name, Jeremy Gray.
All right, so...
Dad jokes galore.
At Ada, 12U blue bracket. Sealing and McAllister will play on Friday. Clinton, Lady Reds, will play the Preston and Washington winner also on Friday. And then Fort Cobb-Broxton will play Chandler on Friday. Over in the red bracket, you've got Noble. Cordell and Noble on Thursday. The winner gets Leedy on Friday. Arapahoe plays Oilton on Thursday, and you mentioned Canute. That 12U team will play the Latta Okemah winner early Friday morning, like 9:45. So once again, I mean, when you look around at these three softball state tournaments, one, two, three, so there's seven Western Oklahoma teams in the 8U, nine in the 10U, and then seven more in the 12U. Very, very well represented. And oh, by the way, here's another little tidbit for you. Of all those teams, only one of them is... Don't get this twisted, what I'm about to say. But we all know if you host these things, you automatically get in to state. You don't have to go through the regional process if you're the host. So out of 7, 14, 23 teams, 22 of them qualified their way there.
Right.
Because Weatherford is the only host of any of this in the 10U. So that is an unbelievably good job by all these teams. You know, sometimes you see that where there's a couple from this, you know, the host town, and you get up there and you're like, man, I'm glad we drew them, or, ooh, they would have got here anyway. You never know.
Yeah.
But as far as just the way that goes, you know, that's an awesome, awesome job by the softballers out here in Western Oklahoma.
Mentioning Jeremy, I tell you that Canute team, they're on a mission because of the way that ended last year. And on the other bracket, the team I've seen, because they played here in this league, very, very good. Kind of raised my eyebrow about how solid they are. But then I thought, well, no shocker here, but the Sealing team in 12U. They are very, very good. So a couple teams locally to keep an eye on. But, you know, we don't know a lot about these other ones. Like the, you know, for instance, Sealing, they go up against McAllister.
Right.
You would think they have a well-put-together team. So... Should be really, really interesting. Up and down, 12U, 10U, 8U. Going to be very eventful. We have a lot to report on Monday.
Monday, we'll be needing the report on Friday, there, bud.
About first round
on how
games.
It went. Yeah,
yeah. Well, some have buys, and we won't know.
That's
anything,
true.
But
that's true. But you're playing Friday or Thursday.
Playing Thursday. League champs didn't get a bye. Moving on.
I don't have anything positive to say about that, so I'm not going to
say
anything
either,
at
so
all.
I'm not going to say anything either.
It's funny, see, because Navajo was in your league and they got a bye.
Cheyenne.
And Cheyenne was in your league and they got a bye.
That's not a knock on them. They just draw them out of a hat.
They do. They just draw them out of a hat.
Why put the time in to find out the records?
You guys were unlucky.
Yeah.
They're all volunteers. Just trying to help your kids win a state title.
They're not helping us. Go ahead. Move on.
Maybe they are. Maybe you need to shake off the rust in the first game after a week or so off.
That is actually a thing of us. Is if we don't, we need a few innings to get going. You know what I mean? So maybe this is a good thing. Instead of waiting on a team that's already played.
There you go. See, I knew you'd see it my way.
Okay, Allie.
College World Series semifinals are today, 1 o'clock, Oklahoma and Texas A&M. Aggies have come back through the loser's bracket after falling to OU last Friday, 13-8. They knocked off Texas 10-2, then beat Notre Dame yesterday. I think we mentioned it yesterday. If you were an OU fan, I think you would have rather got a piece of Notre Dame than Texas A&M. Just because I think A&M's a better team, and that's proven out by the fact that they were the fifth overall national seed.
Of course.
So, but it's still, it's a team that you beat pretty handily last Friday. I think to me, the key to Oklahoma winning this game is get started early, and that's something they've been very, very good at since the Big 12 tournament, because A&M, the strength of their team is that bullpen. And so the Sooners need to get out early and not be in a situation where they need to generate some runs late.
Yeah, that's been the key to this run is their hot starts and holding on. And that's kind of been their – that was their – it's funny how that – it's like they fixed it. During the season, they would do that, and then they'd give up. And they almost did it the first time against A&M, but they just ran out of innings. But they would give up those leads. Of course, the Texas series comes to mind, so is the OSU series. But it looks like they have fixed that, and credit OU's pitching too, up and down, being healthy and throwing strikes. But that's key. And then the pitching has got to remain dominant like they have been. And whoever Johnson throws out there, and I hope it's the best, you know, they start on that side, you know, shut down A&M and their bats. And if OU continues to swing the bats like they have been, they should be okay. We'll see what happens. There's going to be a lot of pressure on them, knowing that, you know, we're one game away from the championship series, one win away. You like to get that win the first time and not the second time.
Okay, you mentioned the starting pitching. Bennett would be available today, but Sandlin came in that game on last Friday. He'd been the number two, the Saturday starter all year long. Johnson replaced him with Horton, who was great on Sunday against Notre Dame. It's an interesting dilemma, I think, if you're Skip Johnson, because you do have that extra game tomorrow if needed. You can absorb a loss and still play in the championship series. So, do you throw Bennett today and try to get it over with, or do you send Sandlin out there with the hopes of being able to sneak by, win this game, and then you're set up exactly like you want to be with 1, 2, and 3 available in the championship series coming up on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday?
Yeah, I always go back to throw the best you got, but that hasn't necessarily been – Skip Johnson has a lot of best right now to choose from. I think he might actually be drawing from a cowboy hat, like he said in the presser before the tournament. But he has a lot of options. I don't think he can go wrong either way.
And the one thing about throwing Bennett today is you give him maybe an extra day rest for a potential game 2 start on 3 days rest, or a game 3 start for the national title on 4. I don't throw him. I keep him in the holster for either the if necessary game tomorrow or game 1 of the finals of the championship series. I don't throw him today. I throw Sandlin, see what you can do, and then you have your horse for whatever you need him for. Mm-hmm. That's the luxury of being 2-0, is you kind of have you have that extra game to see what you need to do, because it's not like if you don't throw Bennett today, you're out if you lose, right?
Right.
You still have a chance to have him being out there in the most important game of the year in an elimination game, or you've got him ready for game 1 and your pitching staff is exactly how you want it for the title series. So I think the benefit of being 2-0 is that you don't have to make that choice until you have to make that choice.
Right.
So I think we'll see Sandlin and kind of go from there today. With Bennett in the back pocket for whatever you need him for.
Now, on the other side, did A&M burn their best yesterday? He threw how many innings? 7 was his name.
And the other thing is, with Bennett, A&M's seen
him. But that was the guy OU rocked.
Yeah, in the first, he only threw an inning in
right.
the third or whatever.
They're probably thinking, man, we kind of want to see him again. Some familiarity there. But there's a lot of confidence there, too, knowing we beat this team once, we can do it again. But what do you think? What do you think A&M does?
With the way that they've had to come back through, their hands are tied. You know, they haven't had the luxury
Detmer,
of
I'm
trying
sorry.
To. Yeah, Detmer. That's I just saw that name too. It's like, man, it's a guy that's a quarterback.
His son, or he's the son, right?
Oh, is he really?
He is the son. Am I wrong?
Of Ty or Coy?
Ty.
Oh, really?
I think he is the son.
I don't think I realized that.
Well, I was watching over the weekend when they played
Texas,
yeah, and the dad Ty had married a Longhorn, I think.
Interesting.
And he
well,
was
he's
setting
BYU,
in
so
the,
he didn't know.
He was setting in the stand. It was interesting. Anyways, go ahead.
Yeah, A&M's gonna. point is, they're going to have to throw whoever they got, and anybody's going to have to be ready. It's almost similar for them, a little bit like it was for OSU and Arkansas in that last game of that regional up there in Stillwater a couple weeks ago. Whoever's available has to throw, and you hope they throw well, just because of how much they've had, you know, to exhaust getting back to where they are. And the other game's similar with Ole Miss and Arkansas. Arkansas put it on Auburn last night, 11-1. Ole Miss in the catbird seat, as is OU. One win gets them in the title series. What an amazing, amazing run. I mean, we're enamored with what Oklahoma's done, right, because we're right here. But Ole Miss, you know, when you watch the selection shows, they were the team that was like Dickie V would have been railing against. I can't believe they got in. And think about
kind of like one of those last to get in.
Yeah, they had to have been last team in that you're so used to seeing with Lonardi on bracketology.
The coach had
the
boxes.
Coach was going to get fired.
He had all of his office packed up.
And now here they are, one win away from playing for the national title.
Do you think it's not? I mean, there's the OU story and the Cinderella story that they're pulling off and. Where they were, so Skip Johnson wasn't going to get fired or anything, but he kind of had that ultimatum against them that we later found out. But they're coming out of the Big 12, and then there's the Ole Miss team coming out of the SEC. I'm like, well, they're no shock. It's the SEC. They just, you know, they went through the rigors of the SEC conference. I mean, that is so. And one weekend you're playing Auburn in a 3-game series. Next weekend you're playing A&M in a 3-game series. Who, by the way, both made the World Series. And so there's like, oh well, no shock they're undefeated in the postseason. They've been battle tested.
Well, and they are. I mean, when you look at this Final Four, it is all SEC teams.
That's true.
Like I told you, we need to start learning. This is the perfect time to do the SEC chant. It's all that's left, right? But anyway,
it's a perfect welcoming event for OU. Maybe not so much for Texas since they got outed.
But they are still, you know, six
still,
of the eight.
Yeah.
We're either are or will be SEC teams here in the very near future. So Ole Miss Arkansas tonight, 6 o'clock is the start time for that one. As I mentioned, OU and Ole Miss win. We know what the championship series is starting on Saturday. I think they go Saturday night, Sunday afternoon, Monday night is the schedule there. But if A&M or Arkansas wins today, they'll be right back where they are tomorrow, same time, same place, for an elimination game for both parties at that point, with an A&M or an Arkansas.
What happens?
I mean, you know, Sandlin has not been very good in the postseason. He struggled a little bit. And OU also, partly because of him, has had their back to the wall. You know, they've been in this situation, and they've lost twice. But then they've turned around and won the game that really mattered after that. I have a feeling both of these – I think we're going to see two games tomorrow.
Okay.
I think we're going to see two games. And then I think it's going to be Oklahoma and Arkansas.
Okay.
Playing for the title.
Yeah. I nearly drove off the road. Where was I? Anyway, somewhere. Listening to the gym yesterday, somebody asked him that question. He said, I'll bet my next paycheck it's OU in Arkansas.
Yeah, if he had to, that's what he said. Yeah. So that's where I'm at. I just think
when it comes to his baseball knowledge, I take that in consideration.
But you're
I see what you're saying.
You're also giving a lot. You're knocking away, or I'm knocking away, everything that Oklahoma and Ole Miss have done. When the run that they've been on. And so is it just
I would love to see OU and Ole Miss. Yeah, just you know, hottest teams right now playing each other for the title. Why not?
And Ole Miss's unis are sweeter than Arkansas's.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We could have a lot of fun with Tyler Harrison if we
sure could
get that one.
Can't believe he's not. He must be busy. Must be showing houses, not texting in about
it's
his
a hot market. I bet he's
hottie toddies.
Yeah. I just don't want to hear the Sue Piggy thingy. I'm not a fan of it.
You think other people are as sick of Pig Suey as Boomer Sooner?
Yes.
I think so, too. Man, tomorrow night is one of the biggest nights in Thunder history, as it could be the night that they select the guy that gets this thing turned back around and headed up the mountain toward not only the playoffs, but then actual contention in the Western Conference and in those playoffs, because the Thunder have the second and the 12th pick in the first round of the draft tomorrow night. I mentioned yesterday that it was the 10-year anniversary of Game 5 of the Finals back in 2012, in which Miami eliminated Oklahoma City for the Larry O'Brien Trophy. LeBron's first. Mike Miller was awesome. But that was also the last time that Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden would be on the floor wearing the Thunder blue. Little did we know that on that fateful night in October, with Notre Dame in town playing OU on Owen Field, James Harden would be traded away before that baby Thunder team would ever have a chance to right the wrongs of that 2012 Finals. This is obviously going to be one of the greatest what-ifs in NBA history. What if they ran it back? What if they won? What happens then? It's just, there's that iconic shot of those guys standing up, watching the last seconds tick down with their arms around each other's necks, and it looked like that picture was going to be like the symbolism of they're back again next year for the shot at redemption, right? The resolve they had as they watched Miami get ready to start celebrating the title. And instead, it never happened. At that time, if I would have told you that night, Jared, guess what? It's going to be the last time we see those three play together. Would you have ever believed that?
No, I probably would have thrown something at you, because I was so mad after that game of how that series went. No, and honestly, no, I wouldn't have thought that, because they're so young. I thought, okay, the calming thing for me after that game was the fact that I thought those three would be together for a few more seasons and we'll have other opportunities at this thing. And then, of course, it didn't happen. But no, if you had told me that, no, I wouldn't have believed you.
Yeah, I mean, there during that season, there were some – you knew something was – not the trade by any stretch, not what I'm saying. But you did know, okay, is there going to have to be a choice made between Serge and James Harden? It's funny to look back at that now and say the Thunder made the right choice. But at the time, most people thought they made the right choice because, A – basketball had not become as positionless as it is now. LeBron and the Heat kind of started that momentum that Steph Curry and the Warriors have blown completely up. But the idea of having guys down low to defend the paint was a huge thing. And Serge Ibaka, to his credit, had really become a budding star. Not a super. He wasn't going to be one of the best 10 in the league, but he was a really good player that had refined his offensive game to where he was automatic from 18 feet. And then, the idea was also, which came to fruition, quite frankly, let's move him out and start shooting threes. And when they did that, everyone was up in arms. Oh, my gosh, he's only shooting 36% from three. Oh, really? And you didn't realize how good that was at the time, right?
Yeah.
And so, it seems silly to even talk like, oh, they made the right choice. But a lot of people thought they did. Even after the trade was made, a lot of people thought they made the right choice just because Harden, Durant, Westbrook, they all seemed a little bit too much of redundancy for the way teams were made back then.
Yeah, they were . Now that's the question I've always had in my mind is, and obviously they had good teams since then. Almost, some teams we thought were better than that 2012 team just, couldn't get over the hump, couldn't get out of the Western Conference Finals. But so the question is, who do you blame for the breakup? Harden, Presti, anything, the changing culture of the NBA at the time? Is there anybody to blame, or is that was just the circumstance of said change?
I think circumstances are a big part of it. And, you know, the one thing that's not ever going to get talked about enough, because when you look at what's happened, I mean, what had, the Thunder have had, what, 5 or 6 guaranteed Hall of Famers in this 10-year run? Those three, Melo, CP, Paul George, so 6 that are guaranteed Hall of Famers and have been to the finals once. And so when you look at those numbers that way, you don't even bother to pick apart, like, okay, what happened? You know, the Thunder were so unlucky twice with the CBA.
Yeah.
So unlucky. And so, you know, some of that circumstances, I think, have something to do with it. Presti being willing to not being willing to give James Harden the extra $4 or $5 million to be a max player is definitely part of it. But also James Harden, here's another thing that doesn't get talked enough about. Are we even sure James Harden wanted to be here? Because that, listen, no one, you know, the beard was the coolest thing about Harden. I mean, he had a huge shot in game 5 down at San Antonio in the Western Conference Finals. But if you'll remember, that finals year, he wasn't very good.
No.
And so would it have worked moving forward with the way those guys, you know, KD and Russ obviously worked, because you're right, they had really good teams. You know, the very next year, they won more games than anybody in the league, number one seed throughout the playoffs. Russ hurts his knee on the Beverly thing, and then phew, it's gone. So you never really got to see what that team was after breaking up this core of the three young superstars, or would eventually be superstars. I don't know if it works, but it's hard to say it wouldn't, because when you look at what happened when Durant went to Golden State, it worked flawlessly. But would Harden or any of the, would those three have made the concessions for each other that Golden State was clearly willing to make for him coming in there? It's hard to say it would, because when you see what has happened with Russ and Harden, especially after the trade happened and the way that they started to play basketball.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of answers to that question.
Do they – is either – because I don't know if anybody could have stopped Durant from being a super-duper star. Because the way he played, he didn't necessarily need the ball in his hands to be great. The other two clearly do, though. So would staying together for another 2 or 3 years, did these two end up having greater NBA legacies at the expense of being on a way better team?
If they'd stayed together, would they have had better legacies than they do now?
Yeah, did breaking up give them bigger legacies in the history of the NBA, but they also sacrificed some team success because they broke up? See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They're going to be are they
going to... No, I think the legacy for Harden is not as great if he had stayed.
Yeah, but he never becomes James Harden if he's still here.
True.
Russell Westbrook never has the Russ season.
The MVP if they're season.
That's right. Yeah. Neither one of those guys are MVPs. More than likely.
That's true.
If they stay together. If they stay together. That's right.
The stats aren't as exuberated as, yeah, I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying.
Would it have even worked, though?
If they had stayed together?
Could they have coexisted?
I think they could have. Egos aside.
Well, that's the problem. You can't put egos aside.
Well, then maybe not. It clearly worked with KD and Russ. And I keep going back to an original question of, did Harden even want to be here? I think he wanted to be a starter. He wanted max money, and so Sam said, "Okay, then we'll send you down to Houston where you can attempt that."
Okay, now here's the question that's going to hurt Thunder fans' feelings. I talked about the choice that everybody thought was there between Harden and Ibaka.
Right.
Was that the wrong two people to be making a choice of? Should it actually have been a choice between Russell and Harden?
Mm.
And if so, did they make the right choice?
So you're saying hypothetically, go back to that October night where the trade happened.
What if it's Russ?
What if it was
shipped?
Russell sent in?
Harden stays. Would there be a banner hanging in the rafters?
I don't know. Brooklyn didn't get one.
But they were also older. And here's the truth. The thing that's hard to quantify here is that you're talking about dudes that were 23 and 22 years old. And so they hadn't made their mark on the league the way that they have now. So would a James Harden,
a
22-year-old James Harden that hasn't even been a starter in the league yet, maybe acquiesce to KD just a little bit more than Russ ever did? And that be what put it over the top?
It's a great question. It's a lot of what ifs, man.
It's a lot. That is why it's the greatest what if there is.
If you answer that one question, then the repercussions of that.
That's right.
I mean, we might not have a Golden State that we have now. It could have been happening in Oklahoma City if it had worked. And you got players who were opting to come to OKC to play with those guys. And
here's a good one.
It's a huge what if.
Here's another what if off of this exact thing. What if the trade, because it was rumored back then, what if the trade was Harden for Clay?
That there you go, yeah.
I mean, there's the what if that surrounds that Thunder team of 2012 and everything that happened afterwards. It is just fascinating to think.
It is crazy
because
it's crazy.
It touches so many other things in the league.
And I think a lot of insiders know, and I say insiders, GMs, owners, presidents, everybody who knows the game and the business of the game. They all realize, man, whatever Sam does, it could have such these huge repercussions. And this is why Thursday night is so interesting for not just the Thunder fans, but for as NBA fans as a whole, because they're going to look, what's he do at number two? Does he find a way to get up to four? Who does he pick with 12 if he doesn't? Because that guy could be another next superstar. He's so good at drafting and evaluating and drafting.
And here's the crazy thing.
I've seen more names pop up for that 12th pick. Than guys I've never heard of.
And the crazy thing is, if he hits on these with what he's got coming up, you could see a situation like we saw last year or 2 years ago in the draft when Golden State's coming off a finals appearance. Then they get everybody hurt. KD leaves. And all of a sudden, they're the number two pick in the draft.
Yeah.
And then they were number seven picking the year that they won the title just now. And with the picks that Sam Presti has amassed from other organizations, it's not just, okay, well, they better get these right because if they start winning, the Thunder's picks are going to be way down the list. No, that's not necessarily true because they have them from a bunch of different places. And, oh, by the way, some of those places look on the cusp of a possible breakup.
Right.
Or can Houston get it right and some of those swaps don't matter. Are the Clippers going to really be Paul George and Kawhi Leonard when it's time to use those picks? Who knows? But that's the thing that you're not as concerned as far as what the Thunder's pick is going to be because you have picks from everybody else as well, or a lot of other teams as well. What lessons can be learned for Sam Presti, for the organization, moving forward from what happened in the constraints that were put on them by certain contracts and this and that? That 10 years ago.
I'm sure he's written down somewhere, don't do this again, or I would do this again, but I would do it like this regarding the whole Harden situation. I don't know what specific lesson he – because only Sam Presti knows what Sam Presti's thinking. The guy, you think he got him figured out, and like I said, the draft, he's drafting somebody you have never heard of, and then they're good. So I don't know. I mean, he did at the time what he thought was best financially and on and off the court for the organization. So I think that is his greed or his motto and that he's going to stick with. And I don't know if there's any tweaking to what he did. I mean, you know, do stuff without regrets. You can't regret anything. I think at the end of the day, I mean, we should be thankful as Thunder fans. I know the last couple of years have been strenuous, but it's all for a purpose. But OKC is now, I mean, 10 years ago, yeah, they were incredibly relevant. The few years after that, incredibly relevant. Breakup happened, rebuild's happening. They're about to be relevant again, and they're always in the conversation of almost any kind of trade day scenario comes up. You're always looking at Sam Presti going, what's he going to do? And that's fun for me. We're not a Sacramento is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I think as far as the did you learn anything or would you apply something different, I think we're going to – it's not going to be the end-all, be-all, but what happens with Lu Dort and what that contract is if he's here, I think will tell you a lot about, okay, has he learned something or has he not? Or not has he not, but is he going to do something a little bit different? Because it can definitely be, the case can definitely be made that there were a couple of contracts that were given, and at the time people were critical of them, and it turned out to maybe even cost the Thunder James Harden. One of those was extending Perk for the money they extended him at the time, not amnestying him, and you know that kind of thing. And then those just add up. You get, you know, then of course you're looking at in the KD time. When it was time for him to make a choice, you know, was Robertson making too much money or whoever, you know what I'm
yeah.
You know, those ancillary parts making too much money to where you're not able to make that move to get Mike Miller in here in 2016 to maybe be that extra guy, the Shane Battier. You know, those names were always out there
right.
of who the Thunder could get to be, you know, complimentary.
Al Horford was even,
yeah. And supposedly that was next was right. coming if Kevin Durant stayed.
Right.
You know, those types of moves, you know, instead of them being theory, they weren't able to be made to show. And once again, the same with Harden applies to Durant as well. Was there anything you could do to keep him here? I don't know if you could. Guys are just ready to go, ready to
yeah.
move on.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do about that. But the what if game is so intriguing.
It is
with that team 10 years ago because of A, what all three of those guys have become since, and B, how damn young they really were back then.
Yeah, we forget how young they were because I keep thinking, man, when are they going to get old? You know, now Harden's starting to look that way. I don't think Durant's going anywhere.
Yeah, and Russ, you know,
Russ is Russ.
He's lost some athleticism for sure, but
yeah,
think about that. That was a decade ago, and these three guys are still almost all-star level players. That's how young they were back then. Wrapping it up here on a Wednesday. Man, Stanley Cup Finals, game four tonight. It's down in Tampa Bay. The Avalanche lead the Lightning 2-1. Lightning got a must-win on Monday. You can't fall behind 3-0 and expect to be able to come back and win, no matter if you're the two-time defending champions or not. I would submit to you, Jared, that this is also a must-win because 3-1 is almost essentially the same thing.
Yeah, in hockey it is. I go back to that stat being the 2-0 stat 90% of the time in the Stanley Cup Final. The team that's 2-0 wins the whole thing. So, yeah, it's absolutely a must-win because you would further get away from that stat. So, being in Tampa Bay, that's going to be very, very very interesting. See if they can get this game.
Yeah, so I think 24 times a team has fallen behind 2-1 and one game three. 2-0, I'm sorry, in one game three. Out of those 24, 13 went ahead and won game four as well to even the series at 2-2. You mentioned being down in Tampa Bay. Here's an interesting stat for you, courtesy of ESPN Stats and Info. The Lightning are attempting to become just the sixth team all-time with the postseason home win streak of 9 or more. They're 8-1. They lost the very first home game of the playoffs. Since then, they've swept through the next 8. Of the previous 5 teams to have a 9-game home winning streak, 4 of them raised the cup. You know, we said in the NBA Finals that it felt like even though Boston was ahead 2-1, the winner of Game 4 was going to win the series because either Boston was up 3-1 or Golden State knotted it at 2 and then had 2 of the last 3 at home. This is a little bit different situation than that because the Avalanche own home ice. But Do you think whoever wins tonight will win the series?
No.
So Lightning can win and the Avs can still win?
Yeah. So I got to say no.
I kind of have a feeling whoever wins tonight wins it all.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
Even if it's
the Lightning.
Lightning, okay.
Just because, for one.
I mean, clearly if Colorado goes up 3-1, that's.
Yeah, it's hard time. You have a hard time seeing Tampa come back.
I can't answer that because I think Tampa Bay might win it tonight. But I don't think they're going to win it all.
Doesn't it feel like, or at least it did to me a little bit, you know, the Avalanche got up 1-0, they disallowed the goal, then they got up 1-0 again. And then all of a sudden, you know, it almost felt a little bit like the Lightning's last stand. Like, we have to win. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, did they put all their eggs in their basket of Game 3 and got the win? But now what do they have to come back from, you know, emotionally and physically? Because it felt like they knew it was a must win and they put everything into it. So now how do they respond tonight? Can they keep going? And I think, thankfully, in that regard, it's on home ice because they can use the crowd for, you know, that extra little jolt of adrenaline or what have you to get there. But don't you – Colorado's better.
Yeah. They're way better.
Outside of goaltending, Colorado's better, right?
Yeah.
I think so, too. Yeah. And that's where I think the Lightning can and will win if they win tonight. I don't think they're going to win. Because I'm with you. I think Colorado is better.
I do too. They've been the best team all season long. The question going into the playoffs was who's going to beat Colorado. Nobody has yet. So I just feel like they are better. But I think as much as you know, they were the favorites coming into this final. But I keep going back to Tampa Bay, two-time defending Stanley Cup champions. So I keep going back to that as that gives them a fighter's chance in this one. So they're just not going to get dominated, you know, win-loss wise. So I can see this thing going the distance, but I think Colorado's just a better team and they're going to win it.
If that doesn't happen, I think it'll be goaltending.
I think I'm saying all this because I wishfully want I want a game 7.
Mm-hmm.
Don't we all? In the Stanley Cup Finals, we won a Game 7. Going into overtime,
especially this one,
yes.
because it's even in the blowouts, it's been entertaining. It's not like it was a 3-0 blowout. So you know, the 7-0, you kept on getting scoring.
Yeah.
The other night, until everybody kind of shut it down in the third period a little bit, but that second period was awesome. Just goal after goal.
Yeah.
It was just fantastic. And so that's why you want 7. That's why you want Tampa to win tonight. And then it just go back and forth from there. So you can see all 7 games and hope you get a classic in Game 7.
I mean, this is an awesome scenario. The series is, you got, like we said, the two-time defending champs. You got this team that looks dominant in the Avalanche. And you want them to go 7 games. And he's like, hey, listen, if you want, you know, Tampa Bay is holding the cup going, you want this? You got to take it out of our hands.
Right.
And we're going to go 7 rounds here.
Yeah, you saw that in Game 3 for sure, where it was time to take a stand and draw a line in the sand, in the ice, or whatever, and Tampa did it.
Yeah.
And you would suspect tonight. I just don't know if they're good enough. I don't know. Well, I think it's less, to me, is Tampa good enough? It's more, Colorado's just really good. Really good.
They're really good.
But hopefully Tampa can win tonight. Because that'll guarantee 6 games and then give us the possibility to get closer to 7.
Who knows, yeah.
So hopefully Tampa can win. I just don't know if they will. Just because Colorado's so good. And like you said, they've been the best team all year long.
Mm-hmm.
Need to watch.
Very good. Oh, yeah.
7 o'clock, ABC. I'm serious. Do yourself a favor if you don't watch hockey. You want to know how good Colorado is in the eyes of Vegas?
How good?
The Lightning won 8 in a row at home. They're 2-time defending Stanley Cup champions in a must-win game. Colorado's favorite. Everybody have a great Wednesday. We'll be back tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered around.